The title of this session is What Kind of Future? Connecting Earth and Heaven. My name is Lou Anne Trost. Some of you have been at these sessions before, and today will be sort of a wrap-up of the 2 weeks connecting environmental ethics and a vision of God's future reign. In thinking about this afternoon's session, I thought about the nature hike that I took this morning with the children in Narnia. It's a lot of fun, and the children enjoyed the beauty and the sounds out in the wilderness, well, semi-wilderness out here by the creek. And I wondered, in looking at, reflecting on the theme of this afternoon's session, what kind of future that those children will grow up to see on our earth and with the environmental problems that face us. What will the environment be like in their lifetimes? Today is the last session on the present and future reign of God. It's also an earth study. You may ask, what does the earth and its systems have to do with the future reign of God, with the promise of a new creation? And that's what we'll talk about today. We've looked at the creation as the whole broad expanse of the cosmos, of God's relationship with nature here on earth and with the whole of the cosmos. We learned that scientific cosmology gives us a picture of the systems, life systems, and the cosmic system as open to novelty. And the cosmological perspective gives us a sense of our place in the cosmos. And perhaps a little bit humbler place than we might have seen in earlier ages. And yesterday we looked at some biblical images. We saw basically two types of images of the future of God's creation. The one seemed to point, especially in the prophets and Isaiah, to a new heaven and to justice and harmony within history. And the other seemed to point to a new heaven and earth, a type of transformation of the present, of our present earth and cosmos. So today, as we look at the creation around us and its future, we think again of the summer theme, Thy will be done on earth as in heaven. And we'll see if we can find connections between earth and heaven, between the reign of God and the future of creation. And then, in turn, how that future vision affects the present and the way that we relate to the earth and its systems. We see the beauty around us here, but we're aware of many environmental problems. We've heard about some of them this week, and outside of here, you hear of them probably quite regularly in the news. We'll just briefly review those, maybe talk about them more later if you want to. Of course, you're familiar with air and water pollution, the buildup of wastes in our environment, depletion of the ozone layer, and global warming, and even the threat of the coming ice age. So we are aware of the problems on a local scale, and we're becoming increasingly aware of the global problems, the global scale of the problems. There are complex connections between the issues of environmental controls and economics. Economic justice. And because of that, we need a broad-scale awareness of the problems and a lot of education. The churches are coming rather late in the environmental movement, but it is important that the churches are now beginning to get more involved. Some, perhaps, that you know of have been involved constantly over the last 20 years since the environmental movement started and became stronger in the 70s. But as a whole, it seems that it's only recently that churches are beginning to become more aware. At a conference that I participated in this spring, David Brower, who is a longtime environmentalist, issued a call to the churches saying that it's the churches who now have the possibility of reaching more and more people than the environmental movement, with its emphasis on legal changes, was able to reach. The churches are able to call for repentance, to see the earth as God's creation and worthy of respect and our stewardship. The churches also are able to counter a material consumer mentality in our society with the message of good news for all people and the possibility of transformation based in the life and teaching and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And I believe that in the vision of God's future reign, of God's future with creation, there is a basis for a call to present response to the environmental crisis, as well as to justice for all people. As you see on the outline on the board, if I get out of your way, begin by looking at sort of a general, well, we've gone through the first section here, and now I'd like to look at sort of a general future-oriented ethics. We often, when we think of ethics, that is how we behave toward one another, and in this case toward the earth, we often think of what's happening in the present and may not see the connection between a future vision. This ethics connected in this session, and I think it's important in our thinking in the church to connect our ethical views with our vision of the reign of God, of God's, what's usually often called God's kingdom. I'm using the word reign for a couple of reasons. It broadens it to not just a place, but more of an event-oriented nature of God's relationship with people and with the earth, and a more temporal kind of relationship there. And it also avoids what is seen as sexist language in the kingdom of God. It's a reign of God that God rules as a beneficent ruler. So this ethics is of God's reign and is connected with God's promise of the future. So it takes place, this ethic is not just what people do, but it's connected with God's coming to us, God's reign breaking in to our present and our future. But when we think of it as God's reign breaking in, that's not a reason for sitting back, but it is a reason for participating in that coming reign of God. It's a call to be part of that future vision of God's will, that God wills to be done on earth as in heaven. We're aware of the presence of God's future and in Jesus' life and teaching. He often said things like, "Repent, for the kingdom of God is at hand." It's here with you in his own life and teaching. And we're aware of God's presence with us as God's will is done on earth among us. So our ecological problems show us the limits and the finitude of humanity and our environment. So I'd like us to see those environmental problems within the scope of this broader vision of God's reign coming to us. I'd like to read a section out of a chapter in a book entitled Eschatology and Ethics. Those of you who've been here before, if you know about theology, all that eschatology means is it's a study of the last things. And it's not just an ending, it's the goal and fulfillment of creation. So the book is written by Carl Broughton, who is a Lutheran theologian at the seminary in Chicago. And his final chapter is entitled, "Caring for the Future, where ethics and ecology meet. About a half a paragraph I'd like to read here, which connects ethics and the future. Okay. The attempt of some contemporary ethicists to free ethics from, It's talking about situation ethics and basing ethical decisions on what's happened in the past. To free ethics from the bondage to past norms and principles in favor of a situation ethics is a failure with respect to the ecological problem. Okay, here's the essence of it. We cannot wait until we get into the situation of crisis and decision and then intuit the right thing to do, for then it will be too late. Our society will have reached the point of no return. If an engine is racing toward an abyss, there comes a time when it's pointless to apply the brakes. An ethics of the future looks ahead for its clues as to what to do now. It studies the future to see what in the present is basically destroying the prospects of a just and fulfilling future for all people. The ethical problem is no longer to develop standards of behavior for past situations. They may never recur. The ethical question is not merely, what have I done? Have I done what is right? Rather, it is this: do I or we have the right to do such and such? And the answer to that question is not whether it conforms to the moral standards of the past, but instead whether it is a means of bringing promise for the future. This is an ethic of promise, a prospective ethic. Broughton speaks also of this being thinking of in the realm of what ought to be, of, and in that sense, a future vision can influence our present action. Think about the future that we, of promise that we want to see, and that God images for us in Scripture, and that in turn influences the way we act in the present. He also suggests that we ought to teach our children to think and live from the future to the present. This reminds me of what I've heard that many Native American tribes teach about the way that they are to deal with the earth, and that is that they are to think of the seventh generation. So they are to think in terms of what will affect the people, their descendants to come for seven generations. So it is a calling to the church for a renewed relationship with nature. As we envision the coming reign of God, we see that God's creation calls for our respect and calls for our present change of lifestyle in order to respect nature and to bring about a future that is livable and that God wills for the creation. I'm going to be referring to an article in a book called Cosmos as Creation. It's edited by Ted Peters, who is a theologian at the Lutheran Seminary in Berkeley and also my advisor. The chapter in this book that I'm going to be referring to is entitled The Future of the Cosmos and the Renewal of the Church's Life with Nature. It's written by a Lutheran pastor in Connecticut named H. Paul Santmeier. The opening of this article is a couple of quotations from Martin Luther. I was very pleased to finally find a quotation in Luther that deals with nature, and I like this one very much. It's from Luther's Table Talk. We are now living in the dawn of future life, for we are beginning to regain a knowledge of the creation, a knowledge forfeited by the fall of Adam. Now we have a correct view of the creatures, more so, I suppose, than they have in the papacy. Of course, we remember Luther was writing much of his writing in polemics. Erasmus does not concern himself with this. It interests him little how the fetus is made and formed and developed in the womb. But by God's mercy, we can begin to recognize God's wonderful works and wonders also in the flowers when we ponder God's might and goodness. So even back with Luther in the 16th century, we have the beginnings of thinking. I mean, there has been throughout the history of Christian and Judaic faith a sense of our relationship with nature. And here we see it in the Reformer, to whom we look oftentimes in our theology for direction. Sandmeyer writes in that article that in the face of the threats of environmental catastrophe, which have caused a great deal of fear in society, we need a God-centered vision that is commensurate with the despair caused by the threats that we face. And this vision of reality is based in hope. It's a vision of reality, Sandmeyer says, which is temporal and not static, that it is of a reality that is changing and open to change. It is one that includes the whole cosmos, not just humanity. It includes the creatures, the plants, and the whole of the cosmos, and is thus holistic. It is theocentric. I'll spend a little bit of time on that. Much of what we've heard in the churches has had to do with human salvation and has emphasized what we know as the second article of the creed, redemption. And that is very important, and I don't want to downplay that. But at the same time, it seems that has been at the loss of a God-centered vision of which includes the whole of creation, God's creation of the earth, and of the spirit, which includes the spirit's life with things of nature. And that, oftentimes, that emphasis on human salvation has left out other species and other life on earth. So this vision of reality will be more theocentric, more on the Trinitarian ideas about God. And it will also be a vision that is ecological and communitarian. We've been talking about that in these sessions and in others. That is, Sandmeyer says, it will not be anarchic, that is, there will be harmony, and that's what ecology really means, that things work together and are interconnected. And it will not be individualistic, because there is no way that we can sustain life on Earth with an individualistic ethic or vision. The vision, he says, will be of a newborn human community in a renewed cosmic home. And that is just another way of talking about some of the images that we get from Scripture. This vision of God's future reign. So then, as we move on here, based on that holistic vision, we are called to a renewed relationship with nature now. We've often heard that the churches have been part of the domination of nature, and that the verse in Genesis that says, replenish the earth, subdue and have dominion over it. That verse has been blamed for the exploitation of the earth. But we need a new interpretation of that verse in Genesis as stewardship of caring for creation. Sandmeyer calls it a righteous cooperation with nature. And within this view, we need to see the inherent worth in all parts of creation. And instead of just seeing things of nature there for our use, for their instrumental value, see them as having worth in and of themselves. We may use the things of the earth respectfully with thought of others and not abuse it for individual gain. He goes on to list in this renewed how this renewed relationship with nature will look. A sensitive care for the earth, for nature's sake. He says, referring to the Genesis story, we're here to till the garden, yes, but not only for the production of goods for ourselves, but to preserve the species of the earth. He talks about the story of Noah. Noah was told to take all of the animals into the ark, not just those that may have seemed of use for people. And this leads us to looking at creation with a blessed wonder. We can contemplate the system, the living systems, with awe as we see how intricate and how marvelous they are. And this relationship with nature also includes a joyful anticipation. We can celebrate a new heaven and earth to come. And even in the sacraments that we share, Eucharist, we share Sunday night here, we have a sense of the elements of the earth that are there sacred and give us a sense of the feast that is to come. Rosemary Radford Ruther has said in something of a critique of traditional Christian thought about the future, she says that the traditional thought that places so much emphasis on the future salvation sort of denigrates the present and leaves us without much concern for what's happening here and now. But with a future vision that's connected to the present and to the physical life of the earth, that vision can sacramentalize daily life and our relationship with nature. So that's about it for the sort of theological or theoretical background to what I'd like to do today. Finally, I'd like us to talk for a little bit about what we can do. I believe that this vision does lead us to concrete actions in the present. So I'll just spend a minute talking about a couple of books that are available and things that you might be able to take home with you and see take place in your churches perhaps. And then we'll open it for discussion and we'll be able to talk together about the things that might be done in addition to reflecting on some of what we've presented here. So first of all, there are, as many of you know, specific steps that you can take in your homes and churches. There's this couple of sheets that's available up in the dining hall that you've heard Al referring to, available for a quarter. In the bookstore, 50 Simple Things You Can Do to Save the Earth. It has some very, I think, really well-written short sketches and with explanations about why you would want to make changes in homes or other places. A couple of the books that are available, there are a lot of books out on environmental concern. Here's the one that Al referred to. What's the name of that again? The Earth?
Our Earth, Ourselves. That's one. Green Consumer is another, if you want the same type of book.
The one that's produced every year? Yes, The State of the World comes out every year that gives a real broad and detailed analysis of environmental problems. There's a book available for just $4. It's in the bookstore if you want to take one of those home with you to show it to your pastor or whatever. It can be used in adult study in congregations. Keeping and Healing the Creation. It's produced by the Presbyterian Church. And this is a book that the bookstore has copies of still. It's called To Care for the Earth, A Call to a New Theology. It talks about some of the things that I've talked about here today, but takes it much broader. The first half is an analysis of environmental problems, And the reason that I thought this book was especially interesting, it talks about the problems on a global scale. It's written by a man who was a missionary in the Philippines. It's called To Care for the Earth. So the first part talks about the environmental problems, and the second part talks about a call to a new theology, connects the problems with how we might think and talk about these things in the church in light of our Christian faith. So those are some of the resources. Why don't we begin now to, if you have any kind of reflections, if you have thoughts, further thoughts on what can be done, you can start in any of those areas.
Are you speaking of in terms of ecology or and preserving the land, or did you have another agenda?
Ecology, right. Sometimes that's seen in terms of preservation, but preservation of natural areas as they are. But it also includes changes in some of the ways that we produce energy, the way that we consume the earth. So I guess it does tie into preservation. Did you have more thoughts on that?
Well, what do you think of all these nuclear plants and things that they're building nowadays? What effect do you think they're going to play in the future,
mm-hmm.
as far as we're concerned?
The question is about nuclear plants and what will happen in the future. Does anyone else want to comment on that? I want to make this an open discussion. Nuclear plants and their role in the future. That's a very big issue.
We
could spend a whole session discussing
that. Well, we don't know what to do with the waste.
Right.
It lasts seemingly forever. There's no program. They have no program, and they're just kind of storing them, waiting for some discovery or some miracle, right, place to hide them.
That's a critical issue, because the waste is so destructive and so dangerous.
What do you think will happen to all this waste they have stored?
Good question.
Eventually something will have to be done with.
Yeah, I guess that they have some processes for reusing it, but it's quite expensive. I used to be better informed on this issue. I haven't been keeping up with it very much recently. Does anyone else?
Well, there was a man for 34 years. The other day, he said they had a process of solidifying the waste.
Uh-huh.
But I have not heard about it before.
Yeah, that's a long shot of a possibility. It really looks like we'll just have to be stuck with the dangerous waste somewhere in our environment for many years to come.
Are you speaking in terms of hundreds of years or shorter term?
Well, what is the half-life of radiological waste? Hundreds. Probably at least, thousands. It's thousands of years. And that's an issue where I think we're only beginning to look at the long-range effects and see how, I mean, society's beginning to, a broader movement against the production of nuclear waste, where we haven't seen, or haven't seemed to be too concerned about the future effects of our present actions. Important one. Do any of you who are going back to congregations see any possibility of of doing anything in your congregations? Do you think that's a possibility? Do you think there's any openness in your, among people in your churches?
Oh, I think they're all concerned about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little congregation in International Falls. It's a Seventh-day Adventist church, and I would say that of all the churches, they seem to are taking a more active part in encouraging recycling and hauling stuff down to recycling centers and really, you know, taking some real practical action.
So there is a church in your community that is active?
Well, this is a Seventh-day Adventist church.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's a very small congregation. But
well, the report from, we've been here a year, just before we left our congregation, the women of the church, due to a call from, I think, the new women's organization within the ELCA, had started a campaign to try to get the church to get rid of styrofoam. A few weeks into this campaign, a note went up that came from the church office saying, these cups are to use over the styrofoam cups, which I thought was very strange. We left a few weeks after that event. Just got a newsletter through with a list of priorities from the state organizer for advocacy in New Mexico. I forget her exact title, listing the advocacy priorities for New Mexican Lutherans for the next year. Not one of them was an environmental
really
cause. Not one. And then I was reading the ones from the church overall today in the Resource Center, and there's a long list of advocacy causes, immediate, you know, for our immediate future, what we're going to work on, and it's sort of a full page, and there must be about 20, 25 listed. Environmental ones are squeezed into one little paragraph. Okay, they probably cover everything in a very broad way, but I mean, there's this much print, and in about four or five columns. I was not encouraged.
Yeah. So the churches aren't taking as active a part as I might.
Well, it's just on one side, on the advocacy side.
Yeah. Well, I think that's true on the whole. There isn't as much happening as there might be. Mm-hmm. You can certainly see that.
Do you think the people maybe just haven't become aware of the dangers yet? Or they don't consider it a serious problem?
To me, the difficulty of the problem is, if anything is to be done, it is going to change our lifestyles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And bottom line, not many of us are really terribly interested in changing our personal lifestyle.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of the reason it hasn't caught on, because it does mean...
And I think churches as an institution, pastors or whatever, I quite rightly in a lot of ways do not want to stand in a pulpit and say to the members of the congregation, you've got to change your lifestyle.
What do you think about that?
Do you think that? Better get a lay person to say.
Huh?
Well, when I quit my job now, I thought, well, we don't need this second car. And I had to drive to work up until that time. Of course, we live in a small town, and it's good for me to walk a mile downtown, which I do a lot. So we got rid of the second car, and it was really kind of a relief.
Huh.
Only had one car to keep up, but we do need that one car, I think. Either that, or there's got to be a real system of public transportation, and which we don't have. Now, you were mentioning the other night you got to have a car that will... What was it? Go 50 miles a gallon of gas, and I was wondering what car. I could never come to Holden Village, I don't think.
Oh, sure, sure. There's a Volvo that I was reading about to get 63 in the city and 81 in the highway. It's a family car.
How big?
It's a family car, I assume, therefore, it'll hold four people.
If they That's great.
Call it a family
how much
car.
Does it cost?
I don't know how much it costs. But I got all those lists and things that I could show you.
I'd be really interested in them. I love our one car that we have.
But we have to force almost the car manufacturer. They can produce their prototypes that get up to 90 miles an hour. They're really all kinds of technological possibilities. And you can drive cars on hydrogen. The French just started a project, $200 million project, and Peugeot and Renault are contributing to test hydrogen in cars, to get rid of the oil, get rid of gas. I mean, it's all kinds of things you can do. And the governments could do them. I mean, they could put a tax on gasoline, which would force the manufacturers to provide you with cars. If they tax gasoline a couple of dollars a gallon, you'd soon go after a car that would get more miles.
I would suspect the oil companies might be kind of displeased.
Well, of course they'd be.
Right.
Of course they'd be displeased.
And if an administration is getting its money in order to be elected, then you're asking the President of the United States to change his lifestyle because he wouldn't be elected.
Excellent
what
point.
What you're doing is asking people to almost force the legislators by virtue of their willingness to vote for certain people and not other people.
Yeah.
That's
an unpopular thing.
It's a chicken and egg argument, too. I mean,
it's a question of where the leadership comes from, where the vision or the strength and courage to break out of break the inertia that there is resistance to change. Does it come from the political and pastoral leadership, or does it come from people who are just who say this is what we want?
Well, I would believe it's inevitably it's in every individual. Can force this about. All you have to do is stop paying your taxes.
Yeah. There.
That is casting your vote. You don't have to even bother going to the ballot. Yeah. Just all stop paying your taxes.
The only people who can stop paying their taxes are the people who don't have anything, in a sense, because they come right after you.
Let it go out.
Yeah. I know. Mm-hmm. But all I'm saying
that's altering your lifestyle.
People who don't have much. But I mean, I've got enough. It is really a major step not to pay any taxes. Mm-hmm. What they would do with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are lots of measures that we can think about that can bring attention to the problems. One would like to believe that it wouldn't be necessary to take those drastic steps, but it's very hard to get past the. Inertia and the resistance to change.
I think we're herd animals. I think Jesus knew what he was doing when he called us sheep. Mm-hmm. It's a very apt analogy. And that most people aren't willing to change their lifestyle unless they think everybody else is going to do it too. You go first.
That's right. That's right.
And I mean, for several reasons. One is not having company in doing it. Not having the courage to do it. At a more rational level, it's, well, I'm not going to make this horrible sacrifice and really hurt myself and not have it do any good. You know, I think that's a very kind of American kind of
sure
attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anybody would. You know, I mean, if you think it isn't going to do any good, you don't see any reason to deprive yourself. Mm-hmm. So then that becomes an excuse for not doing it.
There are all kinds of levels of deprivation. You know, just all kinds of levels.
Right.
And, you know, you can stop eating meat, you can stop buying clothes, you can stop buying books, do all kinds of little things which are going to cut down on the carbon dioxide emissions. Just all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do a lot, but if a lot of people do it, then it begins to,
that's right,
to add up. Now, that isn't going to really provide you with a car that gets you 50 or 60 miles. But there are cars, if you're willing to buy them, that get that. So then it's going to cost you more money. And it's going to cost you more money to insulate your home and use less electricity and to maybe change your windows so you have really windows that don't leak. There's just all kinds of things we can do at different levels, which cost differently.
Yeah, and those kinds of changes, I think, need a communal vision that we can together bring changes about. Like you said, Janet, you want to know that you're participating with others, that others are doing this too. Around Berkeley, there's a pretty good ethos of environmental concern, and it is sort of the thing to do to be. There's a community recycling program. They pick up, you separate your tin, glass, and newspapers. They pick up weekly at the curbside. So that's a great encouragement for recycling. But there's still, it's still too many cars in the Bay Area. You look from Berkeley over the San Francisco Bay to the Golden Gate Bridge, and so many days it's just smogged in. It's beginning to look like the LA Basin.
So there probably should be a real thrust toward pooling rides and people want to be independent, though. They want independence, and they want to be independent. I mean, I know my neighbor, our backyard joins theirs in the circle, and she also retired, and she says, well, we tried one car, but we had to go back to two. She said, we're just constantly waiting for each other.
I don't think the issue is two cars.
No.
Because if you're going to drive, you're going to drive so many miles.
Yeah.
It's a question of whatever car you have gets.
Yeah.
Per mile. And of course, the other question is how many miles you drive.
Right, right.
But cities, I read of one city that has a regulation now that you can't get on the main highway unless there are two people on the car until after the traffic jam is in the morning is over. And they simply will not let you on.
And they are able to enforce this at every entrance road?
Well, that's what they have to do.
How do they enforce it? They must
have. I don't know. I just read it.
It's interesting.
Toronto has agreed to reduce its emissions, carbon dioxide, by 20% by 1995. They've instituted a citywide program to get rid of 20%. That's not enough, but it's certainly a good start. It's much better than having an increase, which would happen otherwise. And 20% is 20%.
And I was thinking of the Bible study this morning, the story of Naaman, the leper. And the message comes to him from Elijah or Elisha, I never can remember which, to go wash in the Jordan, and he gets all offended because, you know, this little thing, you know.
Mm-hmm, right.
And his servants say, well, if he'd asked you to do something really big, would you have not done it? And I don't know, it's going to take some kind of really incredible leadership, some person to come to the fore. And goodness knows you don't see anybody in the wings.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe it's because we are trying to trifle around the edges with little things, this little bit and that little bit. And it's really going to take someone or something that can get through with the big thing.
Major changes.
The major change that's really going to make a difference before people can see. Yeah, this is really going to change things. If I do this, this is going to really change things.
Well, I think God is going to change our climate.
Mm.
I think there are going to be hurricanes and all kinds of changes in climate, which are simply going to force us into facing.
It's part of the warming.
Part of the warming, it's going to get warmer, it's inevitably going to get warmer, and the only question is how much warmer, how fast. I mean, the correlation between carbon dioxide and temperature is simply here from 160,000 years. It's going to get warmer. Now, what happens, nobody knows quite with that warming, what the effect of that warming is, but it's going to get warmer. And there are going to be more days over 100 in many cities. And the whole climate, the whole growing season, all kinds of things. The water, some places will get the water in the winter and not in the summer, and they'll have floods in the early spring, and it's simply going to finally, I think that's where I see God speaking to us through nature and saying, change your ways of life. Now, I think personally, that our culture is telling us the same thing with all of the homicides and suicides and alcoholics and with all the poverty and all the death that's occurring. I think we could get the message, the same message. We are not living in such a way to be faithful to God in America, particularly. But I think nature is going to be the vehicle which simply brings this civilization to its knees. You can't have the kind of civilization with all the kinds of consumption and all the kinds of pollution that are going on without paying the consequences. And with all the unconcern about a fifth of our people in poverty, if you lived in the city where I do, where from 40 to 70% poverty all around the university community, every single community, 40 to 70% poverty, nobody knows what to do with it. People are just destroying themselves in those communities. And we aren't doing anything. I think that the environment is God's way of really bringing us, I give the theological interpretation. That he's going to, he, she, it, we, to be brought to our knees. I really do think that's what's coming. And it's just a matter of time. Just a matter of time. And we can anticipate. I like what you say about thinking, living toward the future. That's the future that we have. That is the future. Inevitably, I believe. Question is whether we live toward the future or continue to live out of our kind of past in our own desires and our own habits, and radical things are really necessary. You know, I think the whole economic system is very destructive, because there's nothing in the economic system that causes any economic enterprise in this country to take the future into account. Nothing in the system that causes that system to live toward the future. So we're pumping our waste way down in. There are all kinds of wells around the United States, 4,000 feet, where they're pumping all those toxic waste down there, and every once in a while they erupt around places. We are simply fouling everything, and it can't go on. You know, it may go on in our lifetimes or for 50 years, but I'd say within 50 years is going to be such a crisis. And if you just take the population explosion, for example, Mexico's population is supposed to go from its present 73 million to 187 million. Can you imagine what the Rio Grande border is going to be when they get 187 million people? We're going to have a Berlin Wall. I mean, you talk about social catastrophe and political problems with 187 Mexicans, 87 million. You think of what the West Coast already has with the way illegal. Now, I'm not saying that the population is the problem, but that is what the future will be if we don't do something drastically different about our relation to Mexico in terms of Mexico's economic development. It's the Mexican economic development that we have to pay attention to, and our whole policy toward economic development of third world nations, you know, it's for the birds, I think. Anyway, enough said. There's just, we are really, I think, in a mess in this world. And it's all covered over by our prosperity. All covered over. But the fruits of that prosperity are now coming to roost and talking to us through nature. That's what's happening, I think.
Well said.
Don't you think there's almost a worship of technology at the expense of a lot of people? And you wonder whether some of it should be, just because something is discovered and invented and can be made possible, is it good to pursue it?
Excellent question. That really needs to be asked, and it's not being asked.
But yeah, we still look for solutions through technology.
Yeah, we do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It will always be a hope against hope. that. That's why we went ahead and built nuclear power plants and left the big question unanswered about what do we do with the waste, because if we're smart enough to build this nuclear power plant, we'll be smart enough to figure out something to do with the waste. Maybe not now, maybe not in 10 years, but we've had these plants for a long time and we still don't have any idea. And what we're doing is we're storing all this stuff everywhere and it will all leak at some time.
But it's ambiguous. See, I had a triple bypass. Every time I go after technology, I got to remember. Because of medical technology.
The point that I want to get to is, is talking about working towards it. I think that what you said earlier about our consumer mentality and materialism in America, and you can read that all over the world, when people talk about the winds of change and about how people behind the Iron Curtain they want freedom. Well, first thing with a lot of people in East Germany, when they got to go over, the first thing they did was go shopping. We're the same all over. We're the same human condition, and what we're all basically concerned about is security. And once we've got security, then we want comfort. The message in the Gospels is so anti-consumerism that I think that we're all in a whole lot of trouble. That's one of the main problems with the Western Church, or the Christian Church, the world over, is that we completely ignore and we reinterpret things to fit ourselves. And we have a lot of teachings. I mean, in the Lutheran Church, we got rid of James entirely. I was wondering, is this James here? Is this a figure with a coat and
the servant? And that's cup? I think yeah.
The towel,
foot washing.
Is it first foot washing? Okay. In the materials that I gave to Al, this thing we put together, one of the seniors last year when she was an intern, she wrote an 8-week adult forum, and the whole thing was on simplifying your lifestyle, and the environment was only one week of the 8. Now, the other ones, for this stuff to work, for it to take hold, it really is a change of life. So this little 15-second commercial before Earth Day, and they said the bad news is that the way things are going, the Earth is sick and it's going to die. The good news is that we know what to do to fix it, to cure it. The bad news is that people have got to want to change for it to happen. People aren't going to want to change as long as this is a fringe thing. And this one of the big problems that we have with the environmental movement is that it's seen as a white liberal thing. It's for people who already have a comfortable lifestyle that can sit around and tell them. But it's not a basic integral thing. And until people see that all these things that Al's describing, they're all symptoms of a disease. And one of the basic diseases is we are not living in harmony. We're not living the way we've been told to live. We are carrying out short-sighted because of sin. It is sin. You cannot walk by a hungry person without giving them food. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to stop right then and there, but you have to be doing something to feed that hungry person. You cannot enjoy yourself.
I don't want to interrupt you. We need to close in just a minute. I want to have just a minute for comments. You had your hand up a little bit ago.
I just think that something that God will take care of us. And if the squeeze is heavy, if the squeeze comes, the people are here regardless. And we will do something about it, and God will guide us to take care of it. And maybe that's an easy way out. And it's a theory, but I do think that's true.
Well, I think that may be the other side of what Al was saying. It may be that it's only when the crunch comes that we will be finally, enough people will be motivated to make the changes. I believe, too, that God, with God, all things are possible, and that is a definite possibility that we will be guided out of it. But I think we, at the same time, need to take the threat very seriously. And not to sort of laugh in God's face and just to say that, well, finally, if it gets bad enough, we'll start making changes. But I think that's, you've sort of given us the two sides of the vision of the future of God's coming reign. It's I've talked about the harmony in that future, but the other side of it is that there is the threat, and we do need to find ourselves caught up in that vision in order that we be part of the harmonious coming of God's kingdom. So I wanted to just pick up a little bit on what Robert said earlier about the churches. And I think that I would really like to see more pastors taking leadership in this area. Some pastors have spoken out on issues of social justice against, in many situations where they've felt they would not be heard or would be challenged, and it would be an unpopular thing to say. And I think that it's time that our seminaries and pastor, the people being trained in the seminaries, start talking about the need to be prophetic in this area as well, to prophetic in the sense of what the Native American people said to us the other day about what is going to be happening, and to have the courage to talk about the threats of the future as well as the vision of God's coming reign. So thanks for your participation.